Monday, corn rallied to new contract highs, and then the skies opened, and like the rain, it fell more than 50 cents. Soybeans dropped too, and it all has happened this week before USDA's release of the crop acreage report. Will there be follow-through to the downside, or will the market consolidate its losses? We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Craig Parr of the Andersons out of Maumee, Ohio. Our panelists today are Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, and Bill Mayer of Rochag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 or representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.
Let's open today's discussion with this question. Seasonally, the corn and soybean markets usually make yearly highs in the months of June or July. What are the odds the 50-cent decline this week in Chicago for old crop corn and soybeans means the highs are in place? And as a reminder, I'll tell you that old crop soybeans made new contract highs in the overnight trade Sunday at 8.63, and the old crop July corn had its high in February at 4.59 and three quarters. Pete Manhart.
I think for the old crop, the contract highs, it's a very good possibility that the highs are in, unless the weather turns around again and gets hotter down the road.
Bill Mayer?
Well, I think we're certainly set up for that. It looks to me like what we've kind of done here is gone back into that trading range that we were in prior to this last move up, 345 to 395 or so on the December corn. And I think that it'll take something to get us out of that range again, either top end or bottom end, depending on, you know, as Pete said, what the weather does here. We will eventually go back to looking at acres and, you know, the acres for 2008, but it's going to take us a little while, I believe.
And Mike Zuzolo.
Yeah, we'd probably say 75 to 80%. The top is in for that old crop July on both corn and beans, unless we had that big run in the delivery process for July futures, Todd, or we got a surprise reduction in one of the two commodities acreage figures where, again, the commercials would make a play and run for the July.
In the corn pit this week, July futures had a high of 428 and three quarters, a low at 366. Their settlement price at $3.67.5 was off 51.5 from last week. And by the way, as we remind you, February is the contract high, July at 459 and three quarters. December, 380.5 was their settlement price, down 43 and three quarters this week after making a new contract high on Monday in the overnight trade through Sunday night at $4.35. Now, most have said that the downside risk in this market in recent week isn't so great, but I'll remind you that in the month of May, there were those of our on the air with us who suggested that a real drop below $3 was possible by the time harvest rolled around. I know there's a lot of weather to be had between then and now, but what's your thinking? Bill Mayer.
Well, I think that as we move through the summer and into the harvest, I think that we could definitely take corn down to where we could see below $3 in the cash market, and that would probably be with a fairly wide basis and futures getting down into the, you know, 3 to 320 area. So I think that's certainly possible. I don't believe that until we actually get in there and see that we've got a huge crop or a big yield, which we won't know. I don't think the USDA is going to show those kind of numbers on the August report unless, you know, it's just a different situation what we're currently looking at.
And Mike Zuzulo?
I think it's going to be hard from a standpoint if the global demand and the ethanol demand stays as firm as it has the next couple, 3 months, Todd, that we're going to be able to get that December futures below $3 even at harvest time.
Tell me, Pete, how is it you see next week's acreage and quarterly grain stocks reports playing out for corn?
I think we're going to see a little more acres of corn and a little more acres of beans because of all the wheat that was torn up. We had a good planting season in corn finally after the kind of late start, but once they got rolling, a lot of guys planted a little more. So I'm looking for a slight increase in corn and a slight increase in beans.
Does it bother you at all that since last winter, about mid-season, talk about demand from the ethanol industry has become nearly non-existent? And why do you think that's the case?
Well, I think that what we're seeing here, Todd, I think that we're seeing as we get corn, cash corn prices up above that $4 mark, that we're starting to put the squeeze somewhat on the ethanol margins. I read an article this week, ethanol dropped below $2 for the first time on the futures this week, and that kind of gets them into some negative margins, at least the plants that have recently been built. So I think that we're starting to see that. I think that, of course, most of those guys are hedged, you know, going into it. But long term, as the prices fall lower on corn, I think that really helps us from a long-term demand standpoint, and you'll start to see that ethanol talk pick up again.
Mike, if you could come back and pick up those acreage numbers for me as well and maybe go through the quarterly grain stocks predictions from you.
Well, the acreage numbers, we'll go with Pete on the higher bean acres, but I think we're looking at, and certainly Pete has statistics in the past 6 years history on his side. I think it's only 5 years. It's been 5 years out of the last six that the USDA has actually increased corn acres in their June report versus what they showed in the June monthly numbers. But I think the problems in the middle of May in the western Corn Belt and the problems with the drought in the Tennessee River Valley and the Mid-Atlantic and Delta states, along with the flooding in Missouri and Kansas, make us want to shake out maybe a little bit less on corn, maybe around a million point two less, where we're running more like 89 and a quarter. But we'd probably look at maybe an 800,000 acreage increase in the beans, rubbing up against that 68 million. As far as the grain stocks, there's been that huge debate that continues to go on as far as the amount of exports we need to ship out in corn every week, and we need a 1.1 roughly million tons of shipments each week to get our needs that USDA has projected accomplished. So there's still that fear that these grain stocks are going to balloon a little bit more for corn. The pace of our exports and beans have been very good, so I don't think anybody right now is really expecting a big increase at all in the bean stocks.
And, Bill, can you tell me about your expectations for the acreage report? And remember, we're at 90.454 in the planting intentions report.
I would expect the corn acres to be fairly close to the planting intentions report, right in that area, somewhere around Informa's numbers. Soybeans, I think, could increase a little bit because of some of the wheat that got torn up. Stocks-wise, I think that Mike brought up a good point there. That's going to be interesting because it's going to some carries come back into the market here, and the question has to be, is that just strictly a trading situation where the speculators have left the July futures, or is it carry coming back in because of the cash market? And I guess it'll be interesting, but all in all, I think even if we do see the feed usage for this third quarter down some, I think with the wheat prices where they're at, you're going to see them reduce wheat feeding this summer and probably put some of that back into the corn. So I'm not sure from a balance sheet it's a huge deal.
Pete, we better talk about that rainfall that really precipitated the downfall in both the corn and the soybean market. Do you think it can put 150 bushels corn into the bin on the national average this year? And then what'd you hear from your clients about the rainfall that they did get?
Well, I've got strips in areas 20, 30 mile wide going across the state of 7/10 to an inch and a half. Then I got strips of nothing to 2/10, and I have strips of zero And I think we've already been hurt enough that we won't make the 150. But we've had today, the southern third of the state, nothing. People from Decatur to Springfield to Taylorville, an inch and a half. Where I live, two tenths. And that was on a 20 to 30 mile direction each way, 2 to 4 tenths. You get to Bloomington, straight west and across, 7 tenths to an inch and a half. So it was very varied. Northern Illinois parts got an inch to two this week. Other parts got 2 tenths. Indiana, just talked to people that got 2 to 3 tenths all week. Ohio, 0 to 2 to 3 tenths. So I think we've already got the top off of it, and I don't think we'll make the 150.
Taking a look at the soybeans now. July futures had a high this week of $8.63. They're low at $7.91 3/4. That high, by the way, a new contract high for the July beans. And they settled at $7.97. They were off 50 and a quarter from last Friday's settlement. We do give you the overnight and the day trade in the highs and the lows for the week, so it's a composite trade. November beans, $8.30 3/4, were down 50 cents for the lead option. Their high is at $8.96 1/4, and I believe that was made this week in the trade, too, on the Sunday night overnight trade just before we got into the Monday session. Tell me about what you see in the stocks report for the beans.
Stocks report in beans, I don't see them changing much. Again, I think the acres will be up a little bit, but I think usage is still tremendous, and I think this down move here will create a lot of more usage for the beans. So I don't see the stocks changing a whole lot in the beans.
Is it an opportunity for producers to get themselves situated for a move higher in the beans, do you think?
Oh, I don't know. That. Oh, go ahead, Pete.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I don't know. I think if we turn around after this next 2 days of rain events and go back to the heat, I think you could see it jump right back. The wave people think we've got another move up, one more, but I don't know that it's a position right now to do.
I would only do that unless you're really uncomfortable with the sales that you have made. Call options are fairly expensive. You about have to look at a bull call spread if you're going to look at something there to protect some sales.
I only ask because I know that there are some that think that breaks in the bean market certainly are places to get yourself situated the other way around. And I wonder, Mike, what do you think about that opportunity?
Well, certainly if you have sales on at lower levels, our first 25 to 30% were, you know, well below the 750 level. And if we would get November beans to break here in the next 20, 30 days, especially if we got our acreage increase we're looking for, Todd, if we could get those things to break around 775, I think from a risk management standpoint, it'd be a good idea. One of our contacts that we have over in the western side of the state had a good conversation with some contacts in Brazil, and they're really looking at these currencies hard right now, and the idea for next year for the Brazilian planting intentions of beans is going to be really tough for them to swallow because of the currencies. In other words, they're going to probably try and plant more crops that stays in Brazil and doesn't get exported out, and they won't have the currency pressure then. So that's something that maybe it won't play out right away, but I think that's something that we got to be looking at down the road. But in the short term, yeah, if we get a quick snap back down to around the 775 level, if you had sales on it earlier and lower price levels, probably be a good thing to do for the next 60 days.
Now, are they talking about more sugar cane, you know, and less soybeans, and then potentially putting first, we'll call it first session corn as opposed to follow-up corn when they usually follow their bean crop with a corn crop in the marketplace and leaving all of that in Brazil so that there might be more room on the world market for U.S. beans?
Yeah, I think they're looking at more just flat-out pasture land and alfalfa and also wheat and also and the sugar cane because the Brazilian government is making trying to make strides in increasing the amount of ethanol for, you know, the amount of ethanol they blend into their gasoline down there and raise the requirements, I think, from 10 to 20% if my memory serves me right. But, yeah, they're trying to keep their logic is they get hit with their input costs, so they want to get away from fertilizer and they want to get away from selling on the world market if they're competing with the U.S. dollar because they're their investment's been so strong down there, it's made their currency very high. So that could all change in 3 months, but right now that's what they're looking at.
And we need some expanded acres. We need to expand acres. Demand continues to go higher in beans, and we either have to expand acres here compared to this year or down there, one of the two. I want to go back just a minute, Todd, to the to the question you asked on the SOX, I think you could see an adjustment maybe 40 to 50 million on beans on the supply demand. Either we've underestimated usage or overestimated last year's crop based on the stocks report here this next Friday. I think that, which isn't a big deal, it's going from 610 maybe down to 570, but I think that there is some room for some adjustment there.
Taking a look at the numbers for the oats, July contract at 264 settlement price. They were down 26 for the week. And then the July wheat futures, 618 the high, the low at 578 and a quarter. They managed to lose 14 and a quarter in fairly stiff competition for losses, at least at the Chicago Board of Trade. And the corn and the bean pit, July futures at 592 and a quarter on their trade, down just 14 and a quarter for the week. December futures at 612 and a half. They were off 9.5, and maybe we'll just let you go with this a bit, Mike, because you like to talk about wheat. We're in the midst of harvest, and they still managed to stay pretty strong when corn was down sharply.
Yeah, and, you know, we've got the price level similar to 1996, but the price action, this harvest rally that we started so surprisingly to the marketplace, is very similar to 1974 and 1980. And in those 2 years, the wheat continued higher. It had corrections like we're having right now, but it did continue higher all the way through July expiration. And unless we see a big surprise on the stocks report, or we see a dramatic increase in yield reports coming out of Kansas and Oklahoma, we'd suspect that there's another round of buying down the road here. We noted that one of the major investment firms that has an index fund ranked wheat as their number one buy this week at the end of the week after this big dilapidated price action.
Taking a look at the numbers now from the Mercantile Exchange. Futures finished like this. June live cattle, 90.65 on the high, the low at 87.30. Settlement price at 87.80. They were off 2.75 from last week. And the August feeders at 108.40 were up 1.45. Cattle on feed report released on Friday afternoon at 2 o'clock Central Time shows on feed as of June 1st at 101, placed in May at 113, and the marketed at 97. Pete Manhart, your assessment of those numbers?
Well, the on-feed was a hair higher than expected. The placed was 3 points higher than expected, and the marketed was a little less than expected. It looks like it could be the on-feed a little negative. The placements it should pressure the October and further out, but it could be a little bullish in the front, a little bearish in the back overall.
Over at the Merck, the live hogs finished like this. Did July had a high of 76.75, a low at 73.70, and their settlement price for the day at 74.02.5. They were down $2.42.5 from last Friday's settlement. The bellies at 92.70 finished $5.75 lower. In just 2 minutes, we'll talk with Craig Parr from the Andersons.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. The first significant rain in several weeks came to Illinois this week. However, in typical summer fashion, some locations got a lot of rain and some none at all. A strong cold front pushing into Illinois on the heels of several days of hot weather helped kick off the thunderstorms. The heaviest rain and most coverage was in northern Illinois, where 1 to 2 inches of rain fell. Bands of heavier rain, as much as 1 inch to 1.5 inches, occurred in central and south-central Illinois, but coverage was more hit and miss. In general, the southern two-thirds of the state has received less than half the normal June rainfall to date. After 4 consecutive days in the 90s last weekend into the early part of this week, temperatures moderated and dew points dropped behind the front that set off the thunderstorms. Dew points began to creep higher on Thursday as southerly winds became reestablished across Illinois. A cold front stalling across the state this weekend will provide the focus for thunderstorm development off and on during the weekend and on Monday. After a day or two break, heat and humidity will likely build across Illinois and the Midwest. That, combined with weak upper-level disturbances crossing through Illinois, will keep alive the chances for showers and thunderstorms until the end of next week. At that point, another strong cold front could produce better coverage of thunderstorms throughout Illinois. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I am Todd Gleason. You're listening to Commodity Week on WILL Urbana. Our panelists in studio today, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois, and joining us by phone from his office in Lafayette, Indiana, is Mike Zuzulo, Risk Management Commodities. And our guest today is from Ohio. He's the manager of commodity hedging and risk analysis for the Andersons. Craig Parr is with us this afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Craig.
Good afternoon, Todd.
And tell me how you viewed the big drop in the commodity markets this week.
One word can pretty much sum it up, weather, and we did see a better pattern certainly develop and right in the central Illinois and in the areas of Indiana, which is exactly where we needed it in the eastern Corn Belt.
And was the 50-cent drop in your mind the way things should have played out or too much?
Maybe a bit overdone. I think if you look at it from a technical perspective, D's corn probably went to just about where it needed to. The monthly low of about 379 basis to D's, and also corresponding with the trend line support from the recent low that we've seen the last 3 months of 356. D's corn stopped about where it should have this week.
How about what do you think on the beans, on the drop in the beans and the potential for those down the road?
Well, the beans do pose an interesting situation. We've built it up a bit on hype, and of course, as we try to pan out what the South American crop's going to look like longer term, I do feel and am fearful that the bean crop could, or the bean futures could take a bit of a more of a nosedive, if you will.
Could you go into a little detail, Craig, on your expectations on the acreage report next week, and not so much just total acres, but where you might see the increases or decreases?
Well, I think if there is going to be an increase, most people will be trying to skew it towards a corn acreage increase. I continue to struggle with seeing that we can plant, or in any given year, this year specifically, that we would see much more than 90 million acres planted. I know the Gov's got something closer to about 90.5 or just shy of that. And that seems to be a fair assessment. I don't know that we can do much more of that. You know, some people talk in 92-ish. That's, I don't think, is possible.
So
90.5.
Do you see that as changes in the, you know, like down in the east and higher in Iowa and Illinois?
Yeah, I think that's a very fair assessment. You get a bit more of the acreage planted in the western Corn Belt. You get a bit lesser corn acreage planted in the eastern Corn Belt. You see a little bit more corn acreage that was planted on the fringe states, i.e. the southeast, some even in the Dakotas and the northwest. That's going to pose a very interesting situation as we move forward into 2008.
Craig, what are you using on the 2007 corn production estimate right now before the acres? And also, do you see it play in July corn as far as commercials buying here after delivery?
I'll start with the commercial play in the corn. You know, we looked at the July corn, and the spread has played some pretty interesting havoc there just prior to coming current. And obviously, we'll go into delivery here in just a few days. I think the commercial will back off and has backed off for some July ownership. Obviously, the cash market does come into play and has suggested that the spread get wider and go wider. You know, the ownership into July is one that will probably come into gut slot ownership. In other words, the commercial play will come in Sepak Nov, where he'll want to own, have some basis ownership, some physical ownership to carry into first quarter 2008.
What do you look at in the yield per acre? Do you think we can make the 150? And if we can, what about basis for the fall?
I do think that it is very possible for us to make 150. I think we do, you know, I hate to play both sides of the card, but, you know, I look at it and say we still are in June. We still have a lot of weather to trade off of and to make this crop. I am surprised at how resilient the eastern corn crop has held in, though, given the lack of moisture. You know, that it's amazing what the technology has done for just the seed and germination and the ability to produce high-yielding corn crop. That in itself tends to bring the yield up year over year. I think it is still quite possible we can have 150 yield.
Craig, what switch gears here a little bit. Wheat, what do you see here, these, you know, historically high-level price-wise that we have? Farmers combining, harvesting wheat, what kind of suggestions are you giving to them?
Well, I think the wheat is always one that is typically every year we find that the harvested wheat is the wheat that's sold. The farmer doesn't really get much in advance of forward contracted in the, at least in soft red, and that's largely because of the variation in yield. We could see yields vary from, you know, 20 to 30 bushels per acre, if not more in many cases. that in itself keeps them from being much in the way of forward aggressive sellers. This year, it happens to correspond, and if you look back in history, we've seen price rallies into harvest for wheat that also encourages them to sell it right off the combine. This year is a unique situation. We got a $6 corn or a wheat price. We got high-priced beans. We got high-priced corn. I think the farmer will certainly reap the benefits of selling his wheat crop straight off the combine, albeit this year we're having problems, of course, in the western hard red states. We're also having a bit of a concern with yield potential in the eastern states, Ohio, Indiana, Michigan, all struggling with the ideas that the wheat obviously is much different than what it looked like last year at this time.
On that,
do you see more wheat acres next year in the eastern Corn Belt due to the high prices of people selling now for next year?
Not just sure from the contracting. I would say that if the prices remain at these levels or high-priced, people have to seriously look at forward contracting to lock it up. If they have any intentions of planting wheat, yes. And I would say that that alone will encourage acres, yes.
The Andersons has been expanding into the ethanol industry. I asked a question earlier about why that hasn't been on the minds or lips of the traders as of recent. Do you have any insight that we might be interested in?
We're a diversified company, and we continue to integrate that into our ethanol business. We've remained diversified. We have, obviously, the rail car fleet, grain division, ethanol division, which has been good to us, and we continue to look at that. And, you know, I think the one thing that does differentiate us is the fact that we're not 100% one industry, and as a company, we've done that intentionally.
And one other question, because you should have some experience with this by now. Usually they say it's a 5-cent bump in the cash grain market around an ethanol plant. Is that been panning out just about the way people think it is?
Yeah, that in some cases it could be 5 or more. It depends on how crowded the environment is. The Eastern Corn Belt getting a bit more on the crowded side. Your panelist obviously touched on the profitability and maybe the lack thereof in some of the deferred or forward months. The profitability has remained cash-oriented or spot-related for ethanol. The forward months have been not as impressive. Eastern Corn Belt states with a lot of projects that are potentially going to go forward, now struggling with ideas of reduced margins past quarter two of this year, and in effect also feeling the impact of an increased equity load from their bankers that suggest that now with the high volatility in the commodity prices, there's got to be more skin in the game.
And do you have any final word that you'd like to share with us before we let you go for the day?
No, I would just say that be ready for the ride. We're obviously continuing to see high and very volatile commodity prices and look to lock in profitability.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thanks again for having me.
And Craig Parr is with the Andersons, where he serves as their hedger and risk manager analysis. Well, a final word from our panelists in studio. We'll start with you, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities.
Be ready to continue to sell on any bumps and ready to protect whatever you're growing on any bumps up.
And Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing.
I think the key is you got to be comfortable. If you're not comfortable in your position where you're at right now with your sales and your coverage, there are still ways that you can get yourself some coverage and make yourself more comfortable going through the next 30 days because it could still be pretty volatile.
And Mike Zuzalo.
Our advice to corn producers would be that if that high pressure ridge breaks down, Todd, the next week or so, go ahead and play the market like 1993. Don't sell anymore, don't buy it, and just wait for the USDA to adjust production down.
Thank you much. That is this week's edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature.